Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association. Supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. Can learn more about the PNWA at pnwa.org. PNWA does a great series of classes in the fall. I'll be teaching three of them, two different memoir classes, two different five-week memoir classes, a beginning class and an intermediate class. That'll be starting in September. This month, the middle of this month, I think the 26th is the first class. And I'll also be teaching a class in marketing for authors who hate to market. I know there's a lot of you out there. And there'll be some other classes as well on craft and the business of writing. That's the sort of thing you're into. And you can learn more about that at pnwa.org if you're in the Northwest here. Also, if you are a member of the Northwest Women's Writers, I look forward to seeing you this Saturday. I'll be talking to the Northwest Women's Writers this Saturday up in Everett. So if you're there, well, I look forward to saying hello. You know, I've had the opportunity doing this job, doing this work of talking to writers. I've met a lot of people who are living really meaningful and connected lives. It's been a real pleasure. And I would say that almost every one of those people who are really thriving and doing the work they love to do and leading life the way they most want to lead it, saw those lives grow out of some kind of trauma, some challenge. It's almost to a person. And I think that those challenges really, the challenges that confront us in our life and how we respond to them really defines how we live our life. And you can either sort of collapse under the pressure of the challenge or grow from it and transform from it. And today's guest, Kristen Meekoff, transformed from it. When she was 33, her husband died rather suddenly from disease, and she found herself a very young widow, which is about a traumatic event as one can experience. But she, as dramatic as it was, she was not undone by it, and she's gone on to do a lot of advocacy work. She's been blogging for the Huffington Post, and this November, November 1st, she will publish her first book, A Widow's Guide to Healing, Gentle Support and Advice for the First 5 Years, which she co-authored with James Wendell. And she's here today to talk about writing and being a widow and helping people. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so very much for having me. I'm honored to be your guest.
Well, it's great having you on. I applaud the work you're doing. And what's interesting to me, Kristen, about this book is that even though it's a very serious subject, it began the way so many books did, it seems to me, if I understand your story correctly, which is, and this is, I've heard this story again and again from writers of all climes, that you didn't see, you went to a bookstore and you couldn't find what you were looking for. Is that right? And you sort of had to write what you couldn't find. Is that true?
Yes, I had, after my husband died, I was interested in books of all different, you know, subject matters with grief and loss, whether specifically, obviously, that with a spouse, but also others as well, because I thought perhaps there was something that I can learn from. And I could not find a book that had narratives of widows, because I'm always interested in the story, how mm-hmm. one perceives their tragic event, and then how they grow from it. And so I've always been interested in human interest stories, whether they're in newspapers or, you know, in print magazines. You know, I'm curious how that comes about for an individual. And so that's what I was really looking for. And I was also looking for a book that helped widows for the first 5 years. And there wasn't anything out there. There's a big misconception that the grief and the loss, it's kind of all wrapped up after the first year. And for anybody who's been through something significant as far as a loss is concerned. They will tell you that the first year is basically taking inventory of all that is gone, and the second year on, you're really beginning to appreciate what that means.
The first year is just basically adjusting to life now, because it's so totally different than what you had expected. And then the next year is then sort of learning to actually live with that new experience. Is that fair?
Yes. I mean, you know, the first year you're kind of going, oh my goodness, this is what it's going to feel like to get through your first set of holidays, or the first, you know, if you have young children, first set of school events. And after that, you're kind of going, oh my goodness, this is what this means for myself, my family, for, you know, long-term even planning. So I think there's a lot to adjust to after the first year. And a lot of times, you know, you see things differently after that first year, and you really begin to have a new set of lenses through which you're looking through at all situations. And so I was curious about how women did that.
And you see things differently. I would assume you see things differently, not just than you saw them in that first year, but saw them differently than before you experienced the loss.
Exactly. So, you know, I read things differently now than I used to, you know, stories, even books that I've read before, when I went back to reread them, many things are different. And so I was very thankful that so many widows came forward and were willing to be generous and share their stories with myself and my co-author. And it was very organic in the way it happened. One widow would say, you know what, if you think my story is interesting, you should talk to, you know, so-and-so. Her story is very, you know, incredible and remarkable on how she was able to take charge of things after her loss. And so that's really how it grew, because people often are curious, like, how did you get all those people to speak with you and share so many personal things? And the widows are very interested in sharing their story, and also thinking about others who would find themselves in similar circumstances.
Don't you think it was easier for them to talk to you because you had gone through the same thing? You must have been a sympathetic ear in a way that maybe someone else might not have been.
I do. I mean, that's very true, because what would happen is I wouldn't just begin an interview and just, you know, say, oh, tell me all about yourself. There's a common golden thread that you know, brought us together, and unfortunately, you know, that it happens to be loss. And the significance, you know, is that they were able and wanted to be able to transform their lives in a different way than where they first found themselves. And I also shared my story with them personally. So I'd answer any questions that they had, you know, things that they would come up. They obviously didn't want to be part of, you know, any other conversation, but they were curious about what I was doing and how I was able to, you know, get it together as far as being able to see a purpose beyond my husband's funeral.
See a purpose beyond the funeral.
Yes. It's very tough, you know. A lot of people, their lives are, the center point of their lives have to do with, you know, their spouse and rightfully so, and the families they had before that. And after, it's very difficult for many to find what their purpose and new meaning for moving forward would be.
You know, I'm married, and it just reminds me when I hear stories about this, and I've interviewed a bunch of writers who have written memoirs, and often it's about death. They love death of a parent or a loved one. Mm-hmm. And it seems that no matter what your situation is, married or unmarried, widowed or not, mm-hmm. your life passes through you always. And sometimes it takes a dramatic experience like this to really understand how deeply it's you. It's always been you. Even as focused as you were on your loved one, it's you, you, you. Your life is lived through you. Do you understand what I'm saying? It is much. You can't.
That's correct.
We can't live for another. We can't live for another person as much as. I mean, I love my wife as much as I can love anyone, but I can't live for her. You know what I mean?
That's, and it's very, I mean, obviously it brings it, you know, you're at kind of ground zero emotional when this happens, and you're cracked wide open, and there's a lot of feelings, and you think, oh, if that happened to me, I would do, you know, A, B, C, and D. But when it actually does occur, you know, that checklist goes out the window. And, you know, you really get to know yourself pretty well. And there were, you know, things about me that I never would have predicted, ways that I felt about people, ways that I felt about, you know. Well, you know, I kind of assumed that there would be people, you know, there for me beyond the first, say, 90 days. And I really thought that I wouldn't have to reach out. I never, you know, I just assumed because I had what I felt was a strong social network. I don't mean online. I mean within, you know, my core family and friends. And I found out through interviews with other widows as well that they feel that same thing that occurs. Some of that support dissipates, and having to reach out is something that seems kind of odd for a widow. And so I didn't do a lot of that in the beginning, and then I realized if I don't start reaching out, no one's going to, you know, is gonna be able to help me. They don't know what I need. And some of it, too, is people do look freaked out. You know, I mean, I could clear out a room. I'd walk into a room, and like, people would kind of just, like, look at me and not, you know what to say. So that's part of it, too.
You know what it reminds me of? Is so my son was diagnosed on the autism spectrum when he was 6 or 7, and you know, that word has a lot of weight to it, and to some people it's like a death sentence. And in fact, when I was much younger, that's how I imagined it. I thought it was, you'll never be happy if you're this thing. That's all I knew about it. I didn't understand what it really was. I didn't understand how varied the applications are for that word. But I would have to go through that sometimes with people. If I said, oh, he had this diagnosis, I had to reassure them that everything was going to be okay. You know, they almost didn't know what to do with it. And it strikes me the same way that people don't know what to do with death. It panics them. And you're put in this position of having to reassure them almost, probably.
It does. I mean, you know, I joke, I've been to New York a number of different times now for, you know, trying to talk about my book, the message of the book of gratitude, and being very positive about the transformation. But you use certain words like hospice or cancer or palliative care or anything, and people literally are looking very nervous and want to, you know, flee because they're uncomfortable. And yet it's something that everybody can relate to because I haven't met anybody who hasn't experienced a loss.
Of course.
You know, or they'll say, you know, they'll say, I'm so glad you're writing this book. My, you know, sister or even a close friend, or unfortunately many times themselves, will be able to resonate. And so, but nobody really wants to talk about it, yet they can relate.
You know what you have to do? You know what your job is in this situation? I've seen this again and again with myself and other different subjects, is when you can ground yourself in your knowledge that it's okay. It was traumatic and it was really rough at first, but you're okay. If you can ground yourself in that and speak from it, they'll be okay. They'll tune to your knowledge of life's ultimate balance. Does that make sense?
Yes. I mean, and I try, that's why I explain over and over, and it's not just, you know, pop buzzwords of gratitude, but I really feel that the foundation for this book is that I've learned that gratitude is the answer to every question. And that is why I was able to, you know, do this type of research and be able to carry on these conversations over the past, you know, 3.5 years with widows, and then obviously be able to write about it and also include my own story within it. Because if you're not very well, as you say, grounded, and that's true, literally and figuratively grounded, you will begin to become very overly emotional, and your message isn't clear, and I don't think your writing is at the level that it should be either. People won't be able to connect with it.
No, you won't. You have to ground in your deepest core to write about these really challenging subjects. You have to write about a time when you were overcome with emotion, because of course, for the big part of this, of the initial time, you were flailing around. Probably you were lost in storms of grief. And so you had to write about it you have to ground yourself in your knowledge of your well-being now to be able to write about that.
Yes, it's very true. I mean, you know, a lot of times in Eastern thought, they talk literally about the tree, how the tree is rooted very solid, and sometimes you'll see the branches and other leaves kind of, you know, going to and fro, but you have to be grounded.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. It made perfect sense once I started thinking about it, but you deal a lot with this in this book, with just that the widow, especially initially, is really, her reality is flipped upside down, and you walk her through just the basics of how to live again, because so much is asked of her, and her connection sort of to the physical world is all askew. And although you don't get into it descriptively that much, when you the long list of things that the widow needs to think about and to consider paints a portrait of almost like a I don't want to say a nightmare, but almost like a dreamscape in a way, because it's so unreal the way you're living, and yet you have these very workaday things you have to take care of.
It is. I mean, I remember saying at times, you know, I felt like I was talking underwater because I would be trying to communicate. And then people would kind of look at me, and I'm thinking, am I even making sense? You know, you're forced to make very important decisions when you're literally living on empty. And that's very difficult to do. Some people, you know, are better at it than others, but overall it's challenging, you know. There's a lot of myths. We talk about the financial myths. You know, a lot of widows feel great pressure to make decisions, and we talk about having a decision-free zone, because sometimes when you make these financial decisions, they can't be reversed, and damage can be done. So we do, you know, give that practical advice as well because of what's at stake.
When you think about the 33-year-old Kristen, and I'm not going to do the math, but however, you're the Kristen of today, what is the biggest change for her? Is it gratitude? What's the biggest change for
it
you?
It is. I'm 41 now. you know, my husband and I had begun to do gratitude lists before he ever got sick, and before it was ever like this, you know, kind of considered pretty popular now and trending. But I didn't really, really understand it, what that meant to be grounded in gratitude, and how that is the lens through which I see my writing and the interviews and the work that basically, you know, I'm doing now. And that's because I don't think you can really simulate that kind of loss any other way. But that's the biggest change. And also becoming personally, learning about writing in general. That's not what my educational background is in, and I had to basically, you know, teach myself the process.
What was the hardest part to learn about the process of writing? Because you were writing, of course, about this very personal subject, and what was the most surprising and difficult thing for you to learn about it?
Learning how to connect on the page and be very raw and honest, because a lot of times for myself, and I think others, want to edit because you think, oh, how will the reader interpret this? And you're worried how they will judge it and edit it and critique it. And so being honest about my own experience, and I'm also somewhat introverted, so that was even more of a challenge for me, even though it's safer on a page than, you know, standing up before, you know, a large crowd. And you don't know how people are reading it either. Because, you know, the other advantage, when you are standing before a crowd, there's some interaction. You kind of see their face and, you know, make some judgments if you're being clear. But the page is, I mean, it's permanent. It's much different. And you're also responsible for what's not said.
Does that make sense? Yeah,
you know,
I know.
That's how I feel. Yeah, but, because it's like, how are people interpreting what's between the words? So I look at
that. You know what? you have to, you don't get to know. I remember I interviewed Yann Martell, who wrote Life of Pi, which was made into a movie,
yes.
But it was a novel first, and
yes.
It was huge novel, got him all over. I was asking him about it, and he was like, that was a very sort of spiritual book, The Tiger in the Boat, and it was all about God and death and so on. He's like, he said, I would go on tour, and I met this woman, and she said, thank you, Mr. Martell, thank you for the book. It was just great. He said, oh, you're welcome. She said, thank you for writing such a great book about marriage. And he said, what? What do you mean a book about? He said, well, it really wasn't about marriage. She said, I've been married, and that tiger is marriage. Thank you for writing a book about marriage. And so, you're going to write what you write, and they're going to think what they think, Kristen. And you will always be wrong if you think you know what they're thinking, because they're just going to fill it in.
That's
true. Nothing.
That's true.
We just can't do anything about it. You got to just give it away.
That's very true.
Even your story. You know what's weird, Kristen? Even your story, because people are going to read your story, and they're going to make it their own. They're going to make it their story. They're going to say, well, what if I lost? And then they're going to live it with you. If you tell it well, they're going to make it their own. It doesn't even become about you anymore.
That's okay, too, I think.
Yo, I know. It's hard. You're trying to help them anyway. And so what? But you were interested. Were you interested in people's stories even before you started rounding them up for this book?
I was. I mean, I've always been a reader from a very, very young age. And I've, my very first publication was for a magazine, or excuse me, a newspaper. And it was in Grand Rapids. And I interviewed Holocaust survivors. And I listened to their stories. And this came after I had watched Schindler's List. And I was very interested in that. And read Elie Wiesel's book, Night.
Yeah.
And I wanted
to
learn firsthand from them. And so as I listened to their stories, I found it just, it's beyond words. And they were able to survive the unimaginable. And that's the first time that I was able to put stories together on the page. And the survivors were very thankful to me. And I felt that I was able to, tell them in an adequate way, perhaps. And so that's kind of what where I first started.
Yeah, and so now you find yourself, and has your relationship to story evolved over the years? Has your thinking about it evolved? Do you see it differently, or has it remained kind of the same?
It has, and it changes with your experiences too, and what you read and how you read it, I think. And and I've traveled a great deal since then. I've been to, like, last year I went to Kenya, and I went to Nairobi, and I met with, for example, widows who live on less than $1 a day. And I spent some time, some good amount of time with them and listening to their story. And I think that that also changes, your experiences change what you read and what you write, if you allow it to.
Yeah. And so how has your writing evolved then over the last few years? How have you seen it change?
It's hard because, we all have, I think, blind spots for our own work and everything.
Sure.
I think I'm more comfortable because I've received, and obviously it's an ego thing, but when you receive positive feedback, when you get published, and somebody, major publisher, I'm having something in an anthology said to me, wow, you can really write. And I was glowing because, you're not sure sometimes.
Yeah, I know.
I write longhand still, and I never publish stuff, so you just don't know.
You know what? Here's the thing, though, Kristen, and this is the truth. Here's what you do know. You know, as you're writing it, if it feels resonant to you or not. I mean, you have to know that, or else you wouldn't put the words down. But what you don't know is what anyone else will think of it. But you do know if it resonates with you. You have to know that. You have to know whether you resonate with it, or else you wouldn't write it. But you don't get to know what other people think of it, but you do know what you think of it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
And then most things I don't publish. I write longhand.
Right.
That's how I start everything. People are like, that's weird, but I still do longhand. And there are things I write for myself just to get it out there.
Yeah.
That, I have absolutely no intention of ever pushing send on it.
Yeah. Well, sure. But do you see that? Do you see an evolution where the stuff that you're sharing with other people that you know is going to be shared with other people, has it begun to sound, is it starting to seem similar to the stuff that you just write for yourself, or is there a clear kind of stylistic difference between the two?
I don't know that I can do a clear stylistic difference because, I mean, it's myself. I'm not
Yeah.
able to be to kind of separate that much. But the stuff that I write for myself, and because it's a different intent to begin with, I think what's on the page is
Yeah.
different. I think over time, though, and because I am more comfortable, I'm taking more chances at submitting things for publication. And so when you become, a little more secure in that realm, you are more willing to take risks on the page, so to speak. And so, and then
Yeah.
also, it's also what I, read more and more, and
Do you read
that's
differently
just,
now?
yes,
Do you read with a
I've
writer's eye
always read
kind
with
of?
a pen in the hand. I always read with a pen in my hand. Oh yeah, I do things a lot differently now. I look at words
Yeah.
differently. Everything.
Yeah? Like what? How do you look at words differently?
Sometimes I'll look at a word and I'll say, "Oh my goodness, I never thought of using it that way." And I'll just look at it,
Yeah.
and before, if I had never thought about writing, I'd just keep reading because they matter so much to me.
The words matter so much to you.
Yes,
Yes. You
they
know
really
why
do.
they matter so much to you, Kristen? Because you want to say what you mean. There you actually want to say what you mean, if possible, right? I mean, you want it
Yes,
actually to get
yeah.
across. It's Andre Dubuis just said to you that art is the transference. This is what Dostoevsky said, with the transference of feeling from one human heart to another, that that's what we're doing. Feeling,
It's true,
overall.
true.
Well, Kristen, been one short conversation. I can't believe it's already time to go. But before I set you free, I want to ask you one more question, okay?
Okay.
I want you to finish this sentence for me. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what? What has it taught you, Kristen?
How to be brave.
Bravo. Good answer. All right. Well, A Widow's Guide to Healing, people write down. They can pre-order it on Amazon now. Yes.
Yes.
And
And in their
it'll be
mailboxes.
in November, November
November
1st from
3rd.
Source, November 3rd, excuse me. November 3rd from Source Books. And but they should pre-order it now, and you'll be going on tour, I assume, so people want to see you, they can.
I'm unsure, but yes, I will be doing different things. Michigan, I'm starting in Michigan first, so we'll have to see. And I have a website and everything, and I answer questions.
Right.
People write to me, and it's confidential. It's not, I don't publish those
And
things.
they can find you on Huffington Post also. Is that, do you still write for the Huffington Post?
Yes, and Maria Shriver in Psychology Today.
Awesome. Oh, you're a busy woman. All right. Well, listen, Kristen, best of luck. It's a wonderful book,
Thank
and
you
best
so
of luck with all
much.
your work. You're very welcome.
Thank you so very much.
Bravery, people. Got to be brave. You gotta love what you write unconditionally. That's what you gotta do, because you gotta live life unconditionally. Well, I think I have next week off. Ah, a vacation. How nice for me. But I'll be back the week after that. Until then, be brave and write something you love.